So the case against water fluoridation, right at the outset, we're going to hear a lot of issues today. And a lot of those issues are what I call inadvertent problems. We search for certain things, certain things we need, and then it throws up these horrible byproduct problems. This is something that we're doing to ourselves, number one. We don't have to do it. Most countries don't do this. We're doing it to ourselves. Secondly, it's a very serious issue because we have driven a wedge between honest science and public policy on this issue, and that is very serious. And it will further undermine the public's trust in the regulatory bodies that are supposed to be protecting us. So just to introduce myself, I spent 28 years fighting incineration, particularly municipal waste incineration, and promoting more sustainable ways of handling waste. And I spent 17 years fighting fluoridation and promoting better ways of fighting tooth decay. As far as waste is concerned, I urge you to see this movie, Trashed, with Jeremy Irons as host. It's a very powerful documentary. And he was kind enough to write the introduction to this book. I hope you all take a postcard here, The Zero Waste Solution, published this month on this whole issue of zero waste. And for me, it's the stepping stone to sustainability. It's in everybody's hands, waste. We make it every day. So I fought fluoridation first as a professor of chemistry, specializing in environmental chemistry and toxicology, and then more recently as director of the Fluoride Action Network. And after 14 years, it culminated in the writing of this book with two fabulous co-authors. Everything in this book is backed up with reference to the scientific literature, 80 pages of references in all. Here's one of my co-hosts, a physicist and MD from Calgary, James Beck, and Spedi Micklem, a biologist from Oxford, taught at Edinburgh University. So a retired chemist, biologist, and a physicist wrote this book. It's been out for 3 years. There's not been one single serious scientific response to this book from the promoters of fluoridation, including the ADA, which has its headquarters here in Chicago. So the outline, I'm going to talk about why fluoridation should never have started, six ugly facts, I could give you more, but I've only got 30 minutes, that should have ended fluoridation since 1990, better alternatives to fight tooth decay, a list of the communities, or talking about the communities that stopped fluoridation, and finally resources that you can get more information from. So why fluoridation should never have started? Number one, we shouldn't use the public water supply to deliver medicine for obvious reasons. And we've never done it for anything else. Why? Because you can't control who gets the medicine. It goes to everybody. Young, old, sick, poor nutrition, everybody. Stupid. Next, you can't control the dose that people get. And ask any pharmacist if there's a drug on the market that you can say take as much as you want, which is what you're doing with water. Because some people drink a huge amount of water. And first, most importantly, it violates the individual's right to informed consent to medicine. It astounds me that any doctor supports fluoridation because they're allowing whole communities to do to everyone what they can't do to anyone, force someone to take medication. There's no reason to swallow fluoride. It's not a nutrient. There's not one single process in the body that needs fluoride. On the other hand, there are many, many processes which are harmed by fluoride. And that's why the earliest opponents of fluoridation were biochemists. People like James Sumner, who got the Nobel Prize for enzyme chemistry. They knew that fluoride poisoned enzymes, interferes with G proteins, causes oxidative stress. So it doesn't do any good to swallow it, and it can potentially cause you harm. And obviously, when it comes to causing harm, it's an issue of concentration. Do you reach the concentrations in different tissues where harm will be caused? That's obviously a question that has to be answered. Now, nature's given us a very clear indication that the baby needs very little or no fluoride at all. The level in mother's milk of fluoride is 0.004 parts per million. That was the single fact that 17 years ago persuaded me that this was a stupid practice. Nature knows a lot more about a bunch of dentists in Chicago about what the baby needs. So right now, a bottle-fed baby in a fluoridated community, and that's the range of concentration that we use, is getting 175 to 300 times more fluoride than nature intended. Absolutely absurd. So the vast majority of countries do not fluoridate their water, including 97% of the Western European population does not drink fluoridated water. Four of those countries have fluoridated salt, but that gives you some choice in the matter. But according to the World Health Organization, tooth decay in 12-year-olds is coming down as fast in non-fluoridated countries as fluoridated ones. So on this graph, this is tooth decay. This is the period from the 60s to the present. You see the tooth decay is coming down in all these countries. 12 of those on the board are non-fluoridated, and 4 of them are fluoridated. Can you tell the difference? No. Can you tell the difference in tooth decay today? No. So part 2, 6 ugly facts that should have ended fluoridation. I'm taking this from the quote from Aldous Huxley, an ugly fact can destroy a beautiful theory. He says it was the tragedy of science is that any time a beautiful theory can be destroyed by an ugly fact. So here's the first ugly fact. Between 1980 and 1990, there were a series of articles coming out in major journals indicating there was little difference in tooth decay between fluoridated communities and non-fluoridated communities. And then kind of to put the matter to rest, the National Institute of Dental Research, which is pro-fluoridation, did a massive survey in the years 86 to 87. They looked at the teeth of 39,000 children in 84 communities in the United States. And what they looked at was decayed, missing, and filled surfaces. This is one way of measuring tooth decay. And they, in particular, compared the decayed, missing, and filled surfaces of children living in fluoridated communities all their lives with children lived in non-fluoridated communities all their lives. And there are around 8,000 kids in both of these groups. So as far as the surfaces are concerned, you've got 4 surfaces on the cutting teeth, top and bottom, that's top 6, bottom 6, and 5 surfaces on all the chewing teeth. And by the time all the teeth have come out, you've got 128 tooth surfaces in a child's mouth. So the average for 5 to 17-year-olds of decayed, missing, and filled surfaces per child was 2.8 DMFS if the child had lived all its life in a fluoridated community. In a non-fluoridated community, the average was 3.4 tooth surfaces. So essentially, in both cases, less than one tooth if you 5 surfaces, 4 surfaces to a tooth. Now, the grand difference was 0.6 then of a tooth surface. That the average saving of tooth decay is 0.6 of one tooth surface out of eventually 128 tooth surfaces. Hardly something to write home about. But making it worse for them is that they didn't even show that this was statistically significant. So we had this meager saving of 0.6, which was not statistically significant. Ugly fact number 2. Very good study done by Warren and workers. This is the famous Iowa study where they've been tracking kids from birth in terms of tooth decay. And they actually estimated how much fluoride each kid was getting each day. How many milligrams of fluoride per day each kid was getting from water, from food, from toothpaste, etc. No one had ever done this before. No one had looked at tooth decay as a function of how much fluoride they actually swallowed. It was always comparing a fluoridated community with a non-fluoridated community, which is very crude because a lot of people in a fluoridated community are now drinking bottled water, and people in non-fluoridated water are getting fluoride from beverages made in, well, you can go on. So, what have I done here? Can the whiz kid... All right, I think we're okay. Thank you. And this is what the author stated. By the way, what they were trying to do was to find the optimal dose. What is the optimal dose? How much fluoride does a kid need to swallow to reduce tooth decay? And they couldn't find it. They concluded, these findings suggest that achieving a caries-free status may have relatively little to do with fluoride intake. Well, that's hardly Again, it should have ended fluoridation right there. If you can't find a relationship between how much fluoride people swallow and tooth decay, why are we putting it into the drinking water of 200 million people? Monty Python. Now, ugly fact number three was in 1999, the Center for Disease Control, which is the big promoter of fluoridation in this country, admitted that they got the mechanism of fluoride's benefit wrong. They thought that the baby had to swallow it before the teeth had erupted, that it would build up in the enamel, strengthen the enamel, and when the teeth finally erupted into the oral cavity and was exposed to acid from sugar being broken down, that the enamel would be protected. Whoops, they said, it doesn't seem to make much difference how much fluoride gets. So they can't get enough fluoride into the enamel during this period to make any difference. And so they admitted that the benefit was actually topical. It works on the outside of the tooth, not from inside the body. And here is an exact quote. However, laboratory and epidemiologic research suggests that fluoride prevents dental caries predominantly after eruption of the tooth into the mouth, and its actions primarily are topical. Well, if fluoride works on the outside of the tooth, not from inside the body, why swallow fluoride and expose every tissue of the body to a known toxic substance when you can simply brush it on your teeth and spit it out? That doesn't eliminate exposure completely, but it would minimize it. And why put it in the drinking water and force it on people that don't want it? Again, an ugly fact, which explains why they're not finding any difference between tooth decay in the different countries, whether they're fluoridated or not. And the biggest survey ever done in the United States, very little difference. And then they couldn't find how much a relationship between how much fluoride you swallowed and tooth decay. This explains it. It works topically. And explains it because fluoridated toothpaste is universally available. Okay, ugly fact number four. The United States National Research Council published an amazing review of fluoride's toxicity. It took them 3.5 years. It was the first balanced panel ever selected to look at this issue. And they came back with this huge 500-page report with the 1,100 references. And it clearly indicated that there were health effects from fluoride, not from fluoridation. They didn't look at fluoridation per se, but they clearly showed that fluoride damaged health because there are millions of people around the world who live in areas of high natural fluoride in India and China, and they've got a litany of bone problems, etc., etc., etc. So no question that fluoride damages health. But more importantly, for our point of view, no adequate margin of safety between the doses which are causing harm in these countries to sufficient to protect our population. And in Chapter 2, which is an exposure analysis, they showed that there are subsets of the population, including bottle-fed babies, that are exceeding the safe reference dose for fluoride as established by the EPA. Again, this report should have ended fluoridation. There is simply not an adequate margin of safety. Ugly fact number five. In 2010, the CDC published dental fluorosis figures that confirm that American kids are being hugely overexposed to fluoride. Not underexposed, overexposed. And how do we know that? Because when the people started fluoridation, they knew that there was one side effect, and that was dental fluorosis, a mottling discoloration of the enamel. But the accepted trade-off in 1945 was that only 10% of the kids would get dental fluorosis in its mildest, very mild form, which would not be recognizable, they said, by ordinary citizens, only dentists looking under, very careful light and so on and so on and so on. And so this was the accepted trade-off. We would reduce tooth decay, but at the same time, only 10% of the kids would get this very mild form of dental fluorosis. Run the clock forward to 2010, and what they come back with is that 41% of all American children, that's an average of age 12 to 15, this is the average of both fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities. So the level in the fluoridated community is going to be higher. 41% of all American children have dental fluorosis. And 28.5% have very mild, 8.6% have mild, and 3.6% have moderate or severe. This is what it looks like. This is very mild. This is the worst of very mild. It ranges from white, opaque patches on the cusp of the teeth up to 25% of the tooth surface. That's 28.5% of our kids have that. And then mild dental fluorosis impacts up to 50% of the tooth surface, and that impacts 8.6% of our kids, and then 100% of the tooth surface, that impacts 3.6% of our children. So our kids are being overexposed to fluoride. Now, the question that was never resolved before the U.S. government endorsed fluoridation in 1950 is that when fluoride is causing this undenied effect of dental fluorosis, a systemic effect, in other words, this is an interference, a biological, biochemical interference with the growing tooth cells, was it not impacting any other tissue in the baby's body? Never answer that question. This is the assumption, almost a biblical assumption, that it wouldn't harm any other tissue. It's just the teeth. Don't worry about it. Well, here's ugly fact number six, and this is the ugliest fact of all. There is extensive evidence that fluoride damages the brains of animals and humans. Now, Leon, you know something about scientific evidence. You know a lot about toxicity of chemicals. Can you imagine the acceptance of this evidence for any other chemical, even additives to bloody motor oil, with this evidence? And remember, this chemical we're putting in the drinking water of 200 million people.
What happened in Agent Orange?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But look at the level of evidence. Comparing it to dioxin. We have 40 animal studies that show that prolonged exposure to fluoride can damage the brain. We have 9 animal studies report that mice or rats ingesting fluoride have an impaired capacity to learn and remember. We have 12 studies, 7 human, 5 animal, that link fluoride with other neurobehavioral deficits. We have 3 human studies which link fluoride exposure with impaired fetal brain development. And we have 37 out of 43 published studies which shows that fluoride lowers IQ. Could you imagine the acceptance of this chemical in anything, let alone a one that we're adding deliberately to the drinking water? Okay, let's look at this last one a bit more closely. By the way, if you want to access these studies, this is our webpage, which is the best in the world for this issue, fluoridealert.org. Click on the button on the top right-hand corner. It's researchers. You get to a health database. In that health database, you can choose one of 14 different tissues that fluoride may or may not impact, and you will get a summary of all the literature. So click on brain effects, and you get all the literature summarized for brain effects with links to the whole papers and abstracts in some cases. Or you can go direct to fluoridealert.org/issues/health, and then brain. And the reason I put that up is you could change this for 14 other titles. You could put bone, you could put kidney, you could put teeth, and so on. So there's a huge database. And in a few days, my son is going to be offering a thumb drive that you can buy, a thumb drive which will have 6,000 papers on it, including all the classified documents which went into Chris Bryson's book. That's another story. Okay, so a lot of research. Now, this research is one of the brain studies. I've met this fellow several times. We helped to bring him to the United States. I went to the villages where this study was done. He compared the IQ of children growing up in a village with less than 0.7 parts per million of fluoride in the well water, and the other village was between 2.5 and 4.5 parts per million. Now, he controlled for lots of co-founders like lead and iodine, no difference there. He's just recently controlled for arsenic, no difference there, and for social factors. And he found a drop of 5 to 10 IQ points across the whole age range, and the whole IQ curve was shifted over. So here is the low fluoride village is the blue line, the dotted magenta line is the high fluoride village. And Zhang estimated that the threshold for lowering of IQ was 1.9 parts per million in the water. And I argue strongly, based upon every microsecond of study I've done on toxicology, that that does not give you an adequate margin of safety to protect on two things. One, the full range of exposure, because some kids in America are going to be drinking a lot more water than those children were drinking in those Chinese studies. And secondly, in terms of the range of vulnerability in a large population. I mean, here we had 200 or 300 Chinese children, fairly uniform genetics, and we are trying to now determine a safe level for a population with different ethnics, different diet, different everything. Usually we use a margin of safety of 10 from a known harmful effect, dose for harm, to a dose which we consider to be safe enough to protect everyone in the population. We have nothing near a safety factor of 10 for something as serious as lowering the IQ. Now, fortunately for us, because a lot of this stuff is buried in Chinese journals, we've been translating them, having them translated from the Chinese to the English. Fortunately, a team from Harvard, one Chinese person, and Philip Grandjean, who's well known for epidemiology, did a lot of work on mercury in the Faroe Islands and so on. They did a meta-analysis of 27 of these studies, because to do a meta-analysis, the methodology has to be the same. So they got all these studies where they compared the IQ of villages with high fluoride versus villages of low fluoride. And the study was published in Environmental Health Perspectives, which is published by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, one of the leading environmental health journals in the world. And they acknowledged that there were weaknesses in many of these Chinese studies. They didn't have enough information. You know, always you've got the problem of confounding factors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, the results were remarkably consistent. 26 out of the 27 studies showed a lower average IQ in the high versus the low fluoride village. And the lowering was significant. About 7 IQ points was the average for all these studies. And the promoters of fluoridation said, you don't have to worry about this because some of the concentrations were high in these villages. Went up to 11.5 parts per million. But, you know, a toxicologist, you don't look at the highest level which causes harm. You have to look at the lowest level that causes harm. And 10 of those villages, the high fluoride was less than 3 parts per million. No margin of safety to protect kids drinking 1 part per million. So no adequate margin of safety. Now, this is what Grandjean said about it. Fluoride seems to fit in with lead, mercury, and other poisons that cause chemical brain drain. He's just written a book with that title. The effect of each toxicant may seem small, but the combined damage on a population scale can be serious, especially because the brain power of the next generation is crucial to all of us. And I want to show you a few figures, pictures, which summarize what he's saying here. And he's used similar figures himself in his presentations on YouTube. That's IQ, normally distributed like every human trait, the bell-shaped curve. Most people are going to have an average IQ. The tails are what is interesting. Above, 170, we're talking about very, very bright kids, geniuses, the area under the curve. The green curve is the fraction of the population who are geniuses. And the magenta is, sadly, the fraction of the curve where the kids are mentally handicapped. Now, if we shift the IQ of the population over by 5 IQ points, which we think we did when we had lead in gasoline, that shift across shifts the average from 100 to 95. As a parent, you would not notice the difference between two siblings, 100 and 95. As a school teacher, you wouldn't notice a difference in performance. You'd have to do very careful tests to actually tease out that difference. So you're not going to notice it. You're not going to notice this unless you carefully study the issue. But look at the tails. Look what we do to the two tails if we make that shift. You halve the number of geniuses in your society and you double the number of mentally handicapped. This is incredibly serious. It has huge social and economic ramifications for a society like the United States. We should not lightly be exposing our whole population in this way with this kind of evidence. And what are we doing about it? We are not doing a single study in the United States or a single study in any fluoridated country to check this, to reproduce it. They feel it's just sufficient to criticize the methodology of any study done in India and China, which borders on racism in many cases, than actually do the studies themselves with their superior understanding of epidemiology. Part three, better alternatives for fighting tooth decay. If you want fluoride, use fluoridated toothpaste. I don't. I haven't used it for 17 years. But better still, use xylitol toothpaste. Xylitol is a sugar. We produce it in our own bodies. It's in natural products like strawberries, pine bark, and so on. It has the remarkable property of preventing the bacteria that attack sugar and make lactic acid, etc. It prevents them surviving in the mouth because they have to stick. They have to stick to a surface. And with xylitol there, they can't stick to the surface of the teeth or the plaque, and they wither away. And it's nice because we don't have to stick to anything, so they don't. It doesn't hurt us. And I would encourage in low-income areas in Chicago, you would give xylitol mints, not chewing gum, because it's not good for dogs, apparently. There's some breeds of dogs which are killed by xylitol. So don't give them chewing gum, but give them mints to suck on, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. They're doing that in Wichita, Kansas, with some good results. And give free toothbrushes and free toothpaste to low-income families. One of the tragedies in the United States is 80% of dentists will not treat children on Medicaid. And that's the real source of this problem. It's a diet thing. It's an educational thing. A recent BBC report from Scotland, a scheme to encourage nursery children to brush their teeth has saved more than £6 million in dental costs, according to a new study. Child Smile involves staff at all Scottish nurseries offering free supervised toothbrushing every day. It emphasizes the importance of toothbrushing and helps parents establish a healthy diet from the earliest stage. The program was launched in 2001 and costs about £1.8 million a year. Glasgow researchers found that the scheme had reduced the cost of treating dental disease in five-year-olds by more than half between 2001 and 2010. The answer is prevention, prevention, as you've already said. Get to the front end of problems. And what we need is most of the tooth decay is concentrated in low-income families. Most distressing is baby bottle tooth decay, where kids suck on bottles of sweet water and stuff for hours on end. Their teeth rot to the gums. That cannot be prevented by fluoride. So low-income families need better diet and better dental education. Less sugar, more brushing. And I argue that if you're going to put your effort into education, not fluoridation, then every dollar that you invest into reducing sugar consumption has two benefits. One, lower tooth decay, and two, lower obesity, lower diabetes rates, and everything else. It would be a huge, sensible investment to do this. So communities ending fluoridation, since 2008, over 130 communities in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United States have stopped fluoridation. That's over 4 million people have been liberated. Portland, Oregon voted 61% to 39% to reject fluoridation, despite being outspent 3-1. The other side spent $1 million, and including, listen to this, this is the Pew Charitable Trust, by the way, in action here. Could you believe this? Pew Charitable Trust are promoting fluoridation, spending millions. They gave $20,000 to to minority groups to support fluoridation. Didn't have to do anything for it. Here's $20,000. Yeah, yeah. In 2012, Queensland lifted mandatory requirement that produced a whole flood of communities that stopped fluoridation. In April of 2013, the new Minister of Health in Israel announced the lifting of mandatory fluoridation. In 2014, it's going to end mandatory. How many communities will stop? We'll have to wait and see. So part five, resources. Got to do this quickly. This is our webpage, fluoridealert.org. Make sure you spell fluoride right. It's U-O, not O-U. Click on the researches button. You can get this online. It's free online, the NRC report. This is our book. I really recommend that. I've got two copies with me. I'm happy to sign them. I'm not in it to make money. The profits go to the fan. There's a 29-minute videotape which you can watch online called Professional Perspectives on Fluoridation. We have 15 scientists, doctors, dentists, etc., explaining why it's a bad idea. Another 20 minutes, if you've only got 20 minutes, watch the facts on fluoride, which comes with a booklet. Again, you can watch that on the webpage, fluoridealert.org. Affecting change. I want to end this because I think this relates to everything that we're trying to do. Affecting change is like driving a nail through a piece of wood. The experts can sharpen the nail. That's my job, sharpen the nail. But I and other experts can't push that nail through the piece of wood. So we don't have the magic bullets to take to Obama or to anybody else or the head of this, that, and other agency. They're not going to listen to us. What you need is the hammer of public opinion to drive that nail home. So hopefully, I've given you the resources, you've got the PowerPoint, you've got all this other information. You have to now be the hammer. And if you can get it out of Chicago, we've won. We've won. This is the home of fluoridation. It's the home of the ADA. It's also the home of mercury amalgams, which the ADA has been pushing for over 150 years. So, but nibble around the edges. You may not get out of Chicago, but maybe you can take Oak Park or get some of these other. Oh, by the way, you've also got mandatory fluoridation in Illinois. Illinois is one of 13 states which every community above a certain size is required to fluoridate. Incredible. So we've got to get rid of that. So we've got work to do in Chicago, work to do in Springfield, but the important thing is to network, try and bring all the groups together against fracking, against genetically engineered food, against the contamination of the Great Lakes, against these exotic pollutants. Bring all these groups together. And if you go back to my other issue of zero waste, and one of the places I go to all the time is Italy. And I've seen in Italy the passione of no incineratore, no discarica, turns to the sea of refuti zero, empowering communities. This is our water, no multinational corporation. This is our food, slow food, organic food. Get rid of Monsanto. It's our community. It's our community. That's what we got to do. I have no hope for change at the top. None. Obama, forget it. No change there. No, he's put Monsanto in his cabinet. No, we have to work at the grassroots level and at least for ourselves, our family, our community, control our own resources. We want clean water. We want clean food. We want democracy, real democracy. We want to empower our communities. We can do it with waste, and you can do it with your other issues. Thank you very much. Yeah.